All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Monday, May 16th of 2022. Thanks for tuning into the stream here today. Answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS, or whatever you guys want to talk about. Your questions drive the conversation here. If you have questions you want me to answer on this show, you can ask them live in YouTube chat if you're watching here live. You can email us, support@sabersim.com, or you can ask your questions in the Office Hours channel in Slack. There's a link to join the Slack community in the description of every past Office Hours episode, along with a timestamped list of everything we talked about on that show. So, of course, if you're watching or listening to the recording, you can bounce around here a little bit if you like. I hope everybody had a good weekend here. Excited to be back on this Monday, an 11-game Monday slate here today in the baseball streets. I feel like typically the Monday slates always seem like they're a little bit smaller, so I was pleasantly surprised to see a nice big 11-game slate for us to chew on here tonight, especially with no NBA. No NBA going on here today as we start to get close to the end of the season, close to the end of the playoffs here, but should be a good slate here for us tonight. We have a few questions in our queue, not too many. If you guys have questions, go ahead and fire away at me here, because only a couple in front of us here for today. I see a question about research builds, research build process, as well as a question we got through support about how to build one lineup for both cash and GPP. How to think about strategically building just one lineup for a slate. So I think that's actually where we're going to go ahead and start, is that question here. We got one in through support. It looks like it was from Anthony here. Let me go ahead and get that question copied over. Cool. Let's go ahead and get this one going. So the question says, here's one thing I'd like to know. How do I build one great lineup? I really have no interest in mass entries. I just don't. I find the most enjoyment in playing head-to-heads and 3-to-5 player contests. Nothing wrong with that. I get it. I am a multi-entry guy, but I definitely get the allure of the single-entry kinds of contests here. I'm going to split these two up here and talk about these two separately. And I actually think it's worth noting that, you know, especially when you're down there talking at 3-to-5, you know, less than 10-player GPPs, it's probably not going to be too negative EV to be playing a cash lineup in those contests, right? Your need to differentiate from a field of 10 is quite a bit smaller than your need to differentiate from a field of 10,000 to get enough edge from an ownership standpoint to be successful there. But I think really, you know, I would probably still say that, you know, if you're planning on playing head-to-heads and some very small field single-entry GPPs, that probably still requires a different lineup construction and a different overall strategy. So I know you're asking for one lineup here. I would say if you're just playing a cashy kind of lineup in both contests with that small of a field size for your GPPs, you're probably just fine. But I do think, you know, I'm going to answer this question on one side from how to build a good cash lineup with SaberSim, and then on the other of how to build a good small field single entry lineup. And I do think those are different questions, for what it's worth. Different lineups you would want to play. But let's start with a cash lineup. So, you know, for a cash lineup, I think pretty simple. The main goal for building a successful cash lineup is just packing in as many projected points as possible under the salary cap. Most of your strategic decisions, the time you should be spending more time on if you're playing a lot of cash, is really trying to figure out how you're going to play the softest opponents possible, getting as much action down into head-to-heads under $3 an entry, spreading out as much as possible, playing as many unique different players as possible. If you're into that higher dollar stuff, if you're getting to playing the higher dollar stuff, sniping unbadged players when you see them in the lobby, posting head-to-heads instead of picking up head-to-heads, all these little things that add up that can add on an extra, you know, point or a half point of expected ROI onto your cash game process. In terms of building a successful cash game lineup, I think it is as simple as putting the cash sliders on, right? Turning correlation, ownership fade, sim variance off, and building, you know, the top 20 optimals or so for a slate. I think most of the time I would probably just be playing the top overall projected optimal. I might switch it up sometimes, you know, for if there is a potentially an injury concern or a weather concern, or maybe if the optimal is pushing you in a direction of playing some really low-owned players and you can play a higher-owned lineup without sacrificing many points. But this would be basically my process for finding that cash lineup. Is I would go in here, I'd build, you know, the top 20 optimals or so. I'd probably look at the first 10 and see what we're getting out of this, right? And see what these kind of these lineups look like. But I don't think, you know, there's going to be, I think for the most part, any of these top optimals, you got a projected score of 113.7, right? All of these optimals are all within just like 0.2 of each other. I don't think there's very much of a way to go wrong amongst almost any of these. I might, if we had all of those lineups close enough together, I might just pick the one that had the highest overall ownership sum, just to play a little similar to what other people are doing in the contest and limit your downside for a cash lineup. But that one's 190% owned. So maybe I would do something like this, right? But I think that's what it really comes down to when you're playing cash. And I think that's also why, you know, at times I think it can be a little bit harder to get a long-term edge in cash games, because the fundamental strategy required to beat them is not as complicated. I do think it gets a lot more interesting when you start talking about some smaller field, single entry kind of stuff, right? And if we come over here and hit GPP, right, we're going to put style GPP, entry limit, single entry, and turn entrance down to 10. You can see that this is, you know, SaberSim is implying that it takes a different strategy to be successful in a very small field GPP than it does in cash games, right? The idea here that these are going to be different. We're going to have lineups that, you know, we still don't worry about ownership in a 10-person contest. We're not going to worry about sim variance very much. But now we want to correlate a lineup. We want to build a lineup with a stack to get a little bit of upside to take down that contest, right? In a, you know, 5-person winner-take-all or very small field GPP or something like that, right? There's the equity in that contest is still at first place for the most part. So we want to take that contest down. So I would, again, probably recommend, you know, if you want to play just a single lineup, you're probably okay playing the cash game lineup into a contest of this size. But if you want to maximize your ROI, I think your GPP contest, even small field single entries, deserve a second lineup that is different from your cash game lineup to take advantage of correlation and to build a lineup that's stacked. So if we're picking out that lineup here, I would do kind of a similar process. I would build a big pool of 500 lineups, right? And I would look and see, you know, what are the different top lineups look like? And, you know, maybe the way I've always talked about doing this is build one lineup and then give yourself reasons to eliminate the lineup based on your own research, right? Until you're satisfied with what you've ended up with, right? Maybe you want to take a little bit of a stand against Coors, right? You're not taking a huge ownership stand, but on an 11-game slate, maybe one way to separate yourself is to fade Coors, right? So let's eliminate stacks of Colorado and San Francisco, right? So we'll slowly, so then we get to another lineup, right? We can slowly kind of eliminate lineups until we end up at one that we like. Maybe it's this one. Maybe this is the one we want to play, right? Or maybe we don't want to play a Cubs stack, right? So let's eliminate Cubs. And we can kind of arrive at a lineup that we want to play here. But all of these lineups in this pool, as we work our way through this, are going to be good, right? So you can see here, we've eliminated Cubs, Giants, and Rocky stacks, and we've arrived at lineup 18, right? And we've got this Severino and Peralta 5-2 stack, Yankees, Twins with a Cubs one-off, right? Maybe that feels pretty good. Maybe we're happy with this. And we rock this lineup into our small field GPPs, right? You can keep going. Maybe you don't want to play 5-2 stacks, right? Maybe you want a really correlated lineup for this kind of contest to be successful, right? 4-3 stack. Now this one looks pretty good, right? And continue to go down the list, knowing that basically any of the lineups in your pool here are viable for the contest. So, you know, that's kind of how I would think about it. Again, I know you're asking for one lineup here. I think cash and small field GPPs do still require a little bit of a different strategy. I think your cash game lineup is probably as simple as just optimizing with building the top overall optimals, maybe keeping a little bit of an eye towards weather, injury risk, ownership to select from one of the top few optimals. And then I would jam that into cash games and just get that up against as many unique players as possible. Fill up the lower dollar cash games before you jump to the higher dollar cash games, things like that. For your small field GPPs, My favorite way here is build yourself a pool, build yourself a good pool of lineups, 500 lineups, use the GBP sliders that build a little bit of correlation into these lineups. And then I love this strategy. I was talking about this last week where you come in here, you'll lineup one will pull up, right? You'll see lineup one first and look for any reasons to eliminate that lineup. Look for, is there anything you don't like about that lineup, right? Look for something that stands out. Is it a stack type that you don't want? Is it, does it roster a team that maybe is a little bit lower projected or too high owned for you? Do you like the pitchers, right? Maybe you don't want to play Peralta against the Braves, right? I think that, at 50% owned, right? They strike out a lot, but also can kind of go off. Maybe you don't want to play Peralta, right? Maybe you don't want to play Wade Miley, who recently came off the IL, right? So maybe you're doing this, maybe you're taking this from the standpoint of the pitchers, right? There we end up with an interesting one. There's another interesting lineup there. So dialing into that final lineup you're taking with you into your single entry GPPs by eliminating lineups off the top, I think can be a really good way of ending up with a high quality lineup where you don't have to do all the work, right? You don't have to decide every single player that's going into the lineup. You're just eliminating lineups you don't want to play, right? Maybe we get rid of, I'm just going to keep going here, get rid of Logue, see what we end up with, right? Matt, pitching is kind of not too great here on tonight's slate, is it? Maybe that is why we're staring down a 45% owned Freddy Peralta, but there's a decent lineup. Anyway, so that's the way I would handle that. But good question. Happy to talk about this a little bit more too. And maybe if there was a specific sport you had in mind, maybe this was more of a NBA question or something like that. Took it in the baseball direction here, but I think process wise, that still works pretty good. So. Cool. Okay. So we have a series of questions here from Nancy Drew guy. And let's go ahead and jump into these. So first question, in a research build, do you change the number of lineups to match the player pool, or do you set the lineup for the contest that you're playing, like 20 max, 33 max, 150 max? Good question. So let's run a research build here. So the answer really is that your number of lineups doesn't really matter here. So in a research build, you'll want correlation, ownership fade at 0, sim variance at 10. And the main thing, and I normally turn min salary to 0 too. That's not a huge factor, but technically is correct. The main thing you want to do is make sure your pool size is 1500, right? It actually doesn't matter what this number of lineups is. We can always change it later. So we could have number of lineups 15, for example. But the main thing, we want to make sure we have a 1500 lineup pool, because the more lineups that are in that pool, the more ground we're covering, basically, right? The more, the bigger our sample size is for simulating this slate out. So I'll build this at fifth number of lineups 15, just to show you here. And then we'll see what we get here on the other side. Because we can change that number of lineups here on the build screen. So we'll give this just a moment to run here. And I see the follow-up question here. Once you get the information from the research build, what would the next step be? So we'll talk about that here in just a moment after this build runs and see what we get there. I haven't really actually even looked at this slate too much here, apart from the build we just did. So I'm interested to see how this is looking. But I can also answer this question in the meantime. Nancy Drew guy says, one last question. How close to lock do you build the research build? For baseball, I think you can start getting interesting conclusions from your research build essentially as soon as we have projections, really. But I think I'll typically run it for baseball probably about a half hour before lock. Typically in a baseball slate, you'll have most of the starting lineups at that point. If anything changes, you a lot of times won't get, significant changes to lineups or anything like that. Projections, all sims, everything will be pretty dialed in. It depends a little bit on the sport there, but for baseball, where we're getting starting lineups again pretty early, I think a half hour before lock is fine. It really depends on, how long does it take for you to run yours and study it and draw some conclusions from it and then build your final lineups. It really depends on how long that process takes for you. I'm pretty dialed in with what I do with these generally. So pretty easy for me to get them done pretty quick. But anyway, if you do, for whatever reason, build the wrong number of lineups, as long as your pool size is 1500, you can just change this up here and just view your whole 1500 lineup pool. And there we go. So there we have it. So anyway, in terms of what do I do with this, right? What's next? There's a couple different things to do, and this is where it will ultimately end up becoming a little bit of your own process of how you want to use this. But how I typically like to handle this is I will look for players that are particularly appear over or under owned by the field, and take some notes here, right? And I'll do that with the leverage column, right? So on a research build, the leverage column is basically saying how many lineups, what's the probability that this player appears in any lineup in the contest, right? And then what's the probability that that player appears in the optimal lineup for the slate, right? And this number will tell us basically if they are over or under owned. Leverage, a negative leverage number would imply that the field is over rostering that player, and a positive leverage would imply that the field is under rostering that particular player. And I'll just take some notes here. I will legitimately just open up either on a piece of paper or open up the Notepad app on my computer. And I will just start taking some notes. So let me actually do that here. And so, for example, right off the bat, and a lot of times I'll break this up into pitchers and hitters and do pitchers and hitters separately. So, you know, on the pitching side, right, I mentioned pitching looks bad tonight. This is a pretty common trend, I think, when pitching can look a little bit rough, is you see the field really, really gravitate towards the best projected pitchers on the slate, right? And we have, you know, 15 percentage points of negative leverage for both Severino and Peralta. So I might write, you know, pitching fades and say Severino and Peralta, right? And then I'll look on the other side and I'll see, are there any guys that I really want to particularly target here on the other side? And you got to keep in mind that like none of these numbers can really be taken in a vacuum, right? Because like, yes, Kyle Bradish, you know, well, actually Chris Flexen, right? Five percentage points of positive leverage, right? But only has a 6% raw chance of showing up in the optimal lineup. He only has 8 projected fantasy points. He's 5.5K, right? He's going to be less than 1% owned. You may not need to get that much positive leverage. But I do think it is starts to be interesting, you know, when you have a guy like Syndergaard, right? Who is the fifth most likely pitcher to be in the or Bradish and Syndergaard, right? Third and fifth most likely pitchers to be in the optimal lineup. And the first two to have positive leverage. So I might make a note here. You know, neither, I think either is a decent play. I might be interested to get a little bit of exposure to those guys, right? So maybe pitching plays, I'll note, I'm just going to write Thor and Bradish here. So we got those two guys, right? And then I'll take a look at the batters too. And this might be stacks for you. Like if you want to do this from the standpoint of looking at stacks instead, you can run your research build with a stacking rule, right? I typically do this with the hitters themselves and just kind of look here at individual hitters and allow that to end up forming how I want to handle stacks, right? So, you know, let's look at the biggest fades here. So, you know, pretty aggressive fade on Colorado, Coors, right? Looks pretty kind of over-owned to me. Maybe the Dodgers as well, or KC. KC seems like a team that's like likely to get a little bit chalky. But it seems like in particular, pitch or hitting fades, right? Maybe a big fade on Colorado and KC and maybe the Dodgers. And then I'll look on the other side of that, right? Are there any hitters that are given kind of good positive leverage, right? Or what are the most likely to be optimal hitters that have positive leverage, right? Ohtani being the second most likely hitter on the slate that is only going to be the second most likely hitter on the slate to be in the optimal lineup that has positive leverage, right? Makes me kind of interested in Ohtani one-offs and maybe some Angel stacks. Arizona's another team that pops up here a little bit too. Toronto, nobody like jumping off the board here. But Arizona, Toronto, maybe LA a little bit, maybe Cardinals or Mets. So I'll jot those down here as some names here just to see what the ultimate build I end up running in the contest looks like. But, and you can spend as much time on here as you have, right? Like I'm kind of running this pretty quickly for the purposes of doing this stream and just, you know, jotting down a few names. You could go pretty deep into this and spend a lot of time diving in and really coming up with like a really cohesive way you wanted to play the slate. There's times where I've talked about this a lot, where I've downloaded my whole lineups file and I actually rebuild this with my exposures in Excel and make an adjustment to every single player on the slate based on the research build, right? That's kind of taking this to the full way. You also don't have to trust this completely, right? Instead of saying, this is what I'm going to do, you could say, these are the spots I'm going to look into a little bit more, right? I want to look into Severino and Peralta because my research build said they're going to be over-owned. Let's go dig and do a little bit of research and see if we can find any other, a vote of confidence of why maybe we want to get off of those guys a little bit more. Or maybe we end up playing them if we find the opposite or something like that. So it depends a little bit on how much time you have and what you're good at and what you want to spend your time doing. But I like this approach here for that. So then what I'll ultimately do is I will come back here and I will build some lineups for the actual slate now, right? For with the sliders that I'm actually, the sliders that are correct for the contest I'm playing. And I'll run this and I'll have my notes here and I'll now have kind of a game plan of how I want to strategize for this particular slate. What do I want to do? So I'll let these build and we'll talk about that here in just a second here. Make sure I'm not missing any questions here. So, cool. Yeah. We'll get caught up on questions here in just a second, but let these lineups build. All right. So now we've got a set of lineups to work with, and we've got kind of a game plan of how we want to tackle the slate. And there's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all answer here, right? We're getting a ton of exposure to Severino and Peralta, those two guys that, were really jumping as fades in our original build, right? So one thing you can try, or one thing I've tried to do, is try taking the most aggressive stance first and see what that does to your lineups and see what you can get away with in the rest of the lineup, right? For example, right, we have a 500 lineup pool. We're looking for 20 lineups. Well, if we full fade Peralta and Severino immediately, right, well, that takes us all of a sudden, our best possible lineup is lineup 140. Our worst lineup by Saber score in our pool of 500 is already lineup 302. So it might just be that it's hard to get completely away from these two pitchers on a slate like this, right? Some of that's going to take a little bit of, you can't handle every single slate the exact same way. Right. Sometimes maybe there's other good pitching options to get onto tonight. If we have 47% owned Peralta and 42% owned Severino, it might just be because it's hard to fade. And in this case, maybe instead we want to say, let's cap both of these guys at 40 or so percent. So that we're at least just a little under the field. Right. And we had a couple pitching plays that we wanted to target, right? So you can see already right off the bat, it's actually pushing us in the direction that we wanted to go, right? It's getting us, we're getting a ton of leverage on Syndergaard, and we are getting some leverage on Bradish too, which were two guys that showed up in the research build as well. Now let's go over to the teams, right? LA, we're already getting LA. That was one of the stacks that showed up in the research build. But maybe we want to take a really strong stand on the Rockies, who aren't showing up at all, actually. And KC, who are also not showing up at all. So maybe in that case, we're just good to go. We did want Toronto, LA, the Mets, and St. Louis, who are all kind of popping up here, right? That all looks pretty good. If we wanted to get a little bit more exposure to any of these teams, we could. Maybe, based on some additional research we did, we really do. Maybe we want to fade the Giants, right? The Giants and we're showing up a little bit on the research build as well, right? Maybe we want to fade them completely, right? And take a pretty significant stand there. We're not fading the pitchers as strong, so maybe we fade the batters a little bit more, right? So, and this is all one other thing to mention too here, and I'm handling all of this on the exposure side from a build, right? Another way to do this is instead to go over to your original projections and make some adjustments to the player projections, right? If you really want to try to get off of some of these chalky pitchers here, right? Maybe a good way to do that instead would be to bring the projections down a little bit, right? So let's bring both of these guys down by 10% or so. And then you can experiment with another build from there and try to get off of some of those really chalky pitchers a little bit more with a projection update. So ultimately, right, run the build, I like to take, at least when you're first getting started with running these, right? Take a few notes of some pitchers that you think are going to be a little underowned, some pitchers that you think are going to be a little overowned. Do the same with things with batters or just team stacks. And then I think the easiest thing to do first is use that as your game plan. And let me show you real quick what I meant by that. So this is all my sheet looked like, right? Like it's as simple as this. This is all I was taking down, right? You can add as much or as little to this as you think is helpful for you, but I was just jotting down some notes, and you've got, this is now kind of a game plan for how you want to tackle the slate, right? And SaberSim does a lot of this for you when you're building, right? This is kind of how ownership fade thinks. It's like, let's look at what these players scored in the sims that build that lineup compared to their ownership and make some ownership adjusted decisions on your lineups. But what this does is it opens the door for you to make some of these decisions yourself, or to decide to do something a little bit different than what SaberSim's doing by default. And I think in a sport like baseball, where there are so many different directions you can go and be successful on a given slate, I like this approach in particular because it gives you that control. So that's kind of the way that I like to think about them here. Let me know if that helps. Let me know if that's clear. But Daniel said exposures using the if function. If leverage is negative, I match the field. If leverage is negative, I match the field. And if there is leverage, I'm going 2x max over the field. Setting stack rules, should I still be using ownership fade, or am I double dipping too much? It's tough for me to say. I think so. I've always said if you are making adjustments to projections or to your exposures before you run a build, right, I think you can definitely justify turning down the ownership fade slider a little bit if you feel the lineups you're getting on the other side are too contrarian, right? But it's difficult for me to give a kind of a one-size-fits-all solution there because everybody's approach is going to be a little bit different, and how contrarian you want your lineups to be is a little bit of your own kind of personal strategic stance. What I would probably do, I would probably run them first. So I would do what you've described here, and then I would run it with default settings, with normal ownership fade. And I would take a look at those lineups and see, you know, what do those lineups actually look like, right? Do you need to play a lineup that maybe has two really low-owned pitchers and a low-owned stack and a low-owned one-offs all in the same lineup for the contest that you're playing, right? Maybe you want to, maybe you don't, right? And then experiment, right? Try one with ownership fade off, right? I think that's always a good approach, is try it at the default value and then try it with ownership fade off and compare those two sets of lineups and then maybe try somewhere in the middle, right? But I think you're probably going to be fine either way, to be totally honest, right? Like I think even if you kept ownership fade at the default value, it's probably not going to kill you. It's just going to have to honor the exposures that you've set as it builds lineups that are well optimized for that particular contest. So I think in general, I am a little bit more, if you're setting min and max exposures before the build, I think you're probably actually better off just leaving the sliders where they're at. I do think once you start editing projections, if you're editing projections directly, you should be a little bit more careful. I think you can double count in a little bit more of a direct and explicit way if you are both adjusting projections and then using a high ownership fade setting. Probably less so if you're just editing min exposures. But I would experiment with it, see what kind of lineups you like, go from there. So, cool. There was a question from DFS Toolkit in Slack here. He had said, will there be any projections for the two-game slate on DK for NBA? I believe so. It requires us to do a little bit of manual work on our end to simulate the... Oh, it's actually already up. So, yes, we will support these. They are already up. Yeah. We have to kind of run some manual sims to get games simmed for games that are not the same day as the slate starts. But it looks like we've already taken care of that. So we will have support. In fact, we do have support there. So, and then Trampas, I'm not really sure what this question is exactly referring to. He said, I got an M by my name. What does that mean? And I'm not entirely sure what you are referring to there. I know there are, when you're like looking at a contest on DK, you'll see sometimes people will have, they'll have their name and then there might be an M and then a badge. That was the only thing I could, that came to my mind. The badge will be like an experience badge. The M typically means that that person's has multiple entries in that contest. At least I think I might be getting this confused in my head. Let me look here. That's not what I wanted to do. Yes. So the M, yeah, the M is, M means they have multiple entries. So that is my best guess for what you were talking about, but wasn't so sure there. So, HC said, what's the max percent you would have on a player? It's going to depend a lot. It depends a lot on the sport. Depends a lot on the slate size as well. I think often I end up handling this more. I mean, I have some heuristics, some general rules of thumb. It depends on the size of the slate. It depends on the sport. And it depends on how many entries you're playing, right? Like, you know, think about what 10% exposure to a player means if you're playing 150 lineups versus if you're playing 20, right? That's two lineups in a 20 max. That's 15 lineups in a 150 max, right? There's a significant difference of what that exposure actually means based on how many lineups you're playing. But I would say, you know, a couple things. First of all, a lot of times I compare this to the projected ownership. And for a hitter, a lot of times I, for, you know, 20 lineups or so, typical MLB slate, I will typically stay around the 30 to 40% range for my hitters, right? If I'm maybe making a big leverage stand and getting a lot of exposure to the Angels, like we were talking about before, I might be okay with kind of taking more of an aggressive stand like this. Maybe if there's not a lot of other teams I like to stack, but typically for 20 lineups, I think a lot of times I have kind of a 40%-ish rule of thumb that I don't like to exceed for these hitters, right? And the reason why, even a guy like Ohtani, right? Most common outcome for him, 0 to 3-ish points, 24% of the time, right? There is no hitting spot that is so fantastic in any baseball slate that I feel like I need a ton of exposure to them. And when I'm playing 150, a lot of times this ends up becoming 30%, and it could be even less, right? Even by no fault, by setting maximum exposures, right? A lot of times my process just kind of leads me to having 25, 30% max to any one hitter. For pitchers, I'm kind of comfortable, you know, being pretty exposed to a hitter or to a pitcher that I really like, right? Even though pitchers generally still have pretty wide ranges of outcomes, at least you get somewhat more of a sense of a normal distribution here, right? Somebody like Peralta's projection is a little bit more reliable, even though, you know, obviously still a lot of floor outcomes down here. This is a little bit more of a reliable curve, I think, than a hitting outcome. A lot of times I'm a little bit more comfortable being more heavily exposed to pitchers. I would say a general heuristic that I'll use there as well is like 2 to 3x the projected ownership for a particular pitcher, right? So like, again, in 20 lineups, I will probably just be fine playing 10 of them with Syndergaard if I've decided that's a positive leverage spot. But if this was 150, I would probably be a little bit more likely to cap this at, I don't have enough lineups in my pool to do everything we were going to do here, but, I would probably be a little bit more likely to maybe cap his exposure at like 20%, right? Maybe 30%. So ultimately the real question of this is like, there's not really an answer that I can give you that fits both batters and pitchers for all different slate sizes, for all different number of lineups, for all different contests. I am more likely to cap my batting exposure than my pitching exposure. A lot of times my maximum batting exposures are generally anywhere from 20 to 40%. And I will use projected ownership as a guide for my pitchers and basically try to be, you know, even if I want positive leverage on a pitcher, I'll probably try to just be 2 to 3x the field on that guy. So When will we get a min-max exposure tab for just pitching and not all players? You have one. Right here. Pitchers. This pitcher tab will let you adjust min and max exposures by pitcher. And if you want to do that up front, you can do that here as well. There's a pitching tab here. So. HC, is it better to do this in step one before building or in step three? Good question. It kind of depends. I wouldn't say that one is much better than the other. In general, step three, I think, is a little bit more about fine-tuning, right? So if you are taking significant stands, like, okay, actually, here's a good example, right? So when we first ran this build, right, and we are getting, so in our research build, we had decided we wanted to fade Severino and Peralta, right? Or at least be kind of even or under with the field, right? To me, this would qualify kind of being a significant stand. We are getting a ton of exposure to both of these guys. And while we can get away with crossing these guys off in step three and be okay, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't break the build. We're making a significant, we're slashing off a ton of lineups from our pool all at once. And all of a sudden, we probably don't have very many lineups left to work with, right? Our 20 here now range from lineup 140 to 302. And if we continue to make more adjustments to exposures, we'd probably find that we'd kind of go through that pool of 500 pretty quickly. So when that's the case, right, if you're making a significant change to the direction of your lineups, I think you're better off giving us some of that information up front. And maybe that comes in the form of saying, don't give me more than 45 and 40% of these guys in step one. Or maybe it comes in the form of dropping their projection down a little bit here in step one, right? Because in step three, the lineups are already made, right? Which can be, what is nice about that is that you're working from a pool of lineups that are already viable. So pretty much no matter what you do, you're unlikely to go wrong. You're unlikely to break something because those lineups were built with the default settings for that slate. But if you're making significant changes to that strategic direction, you are going to just go through that pool of lineups really quickly. And you might be better off going back to step one and making some of your adjustments there. So if you have a strong stand of how you want to tackle the slate, I would say let us know in step one. Step three is best thought of as more about fine tuning and dialing in and kind of doing some quality control of your lineups. But it really depends on what adjustment you're making. So. Oh, Aaron says, oh, okay, I get it. I was talking about it in the settings. Yeah, so that is something that's on our radar. That's something we want to add. A max exposure, a global max exposure that is separated for hitters and pitchers gets brought up a lot. That's something that we'll add in the future. I don't have an ETA on that particular feature at the moment, unfortunately, but it has been pretty commonly requested. So that is on our radar. What other questions do we have here for today? Tough slate tonight, honestly. Looking at this, doing a little research, I think these ones can be hard in particular, where you've got two pitchers that are kind of far and away better than everyone else. I think at the moment, based on those couple builds we did, the research builds, I think I'm a little bit more inclined to just eat some of that chalk with some of these guys here. I do think Syndergaard and Bradish were interesting names popping up in the research builds. But I think at the moment, I'm a little more inclined to just eat some of that pitching chalk and probably differentiate with the bats and maybe get away from some of the popular Coors stacks. It seems like Coors and Dodgers are probably going to be pretty popular. Yankees have been popular lately too. So those are probably your popular stacks. Might be the best way to differentiate tonight here. But HC says, is it okay to do it in the settings box also before builds? Yeah, that's fine. This is global. So anything you set here is going to apply to every single player. So if you set this, right, I would make sure this is set at whatever you're comfortable being your highest overall max exposure to any player, right? If you set this down at like 20%, like that's going to make you really spread out. I would probably say, you know, maybe this is better set at something like 60 or 70%, depending on how much total max exposure you're comfortable having. But yeah, just keep in mind that that's a global option there. I didn't press start build there, but that will apply globally. It will apply to every lineup in your pool and your entire pool itself. So yeah, kind of depends on your goal here, right? What are you trying to accomplish with this build? You know, you might have certain players that you're trying to take stands on. Maybe you are trying to, I guess that's another important note here is that, you know, to me, setting a global max exposure would be more about diversification and making sure that you're not too overexposed to any one player. The research builds I typically think about more from the standpoint of finding specific leverage on certain players. So Craig said, when running a research build, would it make sense to run it with correlation on 5 to account for stacking? This way your research isn't based on lineups with 8 one-offs. It depends on what you want to research. If you are researching stacks, right? If your goal is researching stacks, I would set a stacking rule. I would run the build like this, right? So I would run it like this and then set a stacking rule, right? And this is going to force a 5 stack in every lineup. It will give you the opportunity to see, you know, how often is stack in the optimal lineup you could have built for that slate. Typically for me, I haven't been running these with stacks and I've been turning correlation off just because I want to make sure that that lineup actually represents the optimal for a given slate simulation. Right. As soon as the correlation slider turns on, so if you run a build like this, it's not gonna kill you. I think the research build will still be very useful for research purposes. But as soon as you turn that slider on, that lineup that you get on the other side is not necessarily an optimal lineup for a given slate simulation anymore. At that point, it is using projections from a given slate simulation and then adjusting them based on the correlation of players and building a DFS lineup, right? It's building at that point, basically what you've done is you're almost building an actual lineup with ownership off, right? That's essentially what you are doing at that point. The research build I prefer to use as like a very specific, I want to see how often a player shows up in the optimal. And the only way to do that is to turn correlation off. The correlation slider essentially affects the projections of the players in that sim bucket. And for research, I just want to study the raw sims. But again, nothing. This isn't going to kill you, right? This is still going to give you useful information. So it really depends on what you are trying to study. For me, like I gave it the example at the start of the stream here, I can kind of, if I'm looking at my research build and I'm seeing that the most commonly overowned hitters are Rockies and Kansas City, right? I can kind of interpolate from that that I'm going to fade those stacks. But I think if instead you want to study the stacks on the team stacking tab, then build yourself a stacking rule so that you can get something out of that, right? This is just kind of the way that I've done it here. So Craig said, in step 1, is there a way to set stack exposures, say 20% angel stacks, 15% rocking stacks, etc.? No, not at the moment. You'll have to do your stack exposure management on step 3. You can set individual batting exposures and kind of approximate that, get kind of close to that. But your actual exposure management of stacks will have to take place on post-build on the build screen. So, good question. Any other questions for me here on this Monday? I don't see any coming in here. If anybody has another question for me, feel free to fire away in YouTube chat here. But I will say for now, if you haven't already signed up with SaberSim, free 7-day trial on our site, sabersim.com. You come check us out. We have support for baseball, for NBA and NHL playoffs going on right now. for NASCAR, MMA, Formula One. There's another Formula One race coming up this weekend here. Esports, Counter-Strike, League of Legends, all with full sim support here. And more on the way. Tennis, college football, soccer, all sports that are on our roadmap here to support in the future. So come check us out. Come give it a try. Sabersim.com again. I think we will go ahead and cap things off here for today. I don't see any other questions coming in. Thank you for everybody that tuned in. I will be right back again here tomorrow. Same time, same place, 2 p.m. Eastern. So good luck on tonight's slate. Should be an interesting one. Again, I think it's going to be kind of a challenging puzzle to figure out with the way that the pitching works out here on tonight's slate. But should be an interesting one. Good luck, everybody, tonight. And I will see you all tomorrow. Take care.